Good morning. Hello, everyone. Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I believe we do have a quorum. Today is Wednesday, September 4th, 2019. The time is 9:13 a.m. And I now call this meeting of the Dallas City Council to order. We're going to start our day, as we always do, with an invocation. And we're going to follow that with the pledges of allegiance to the United States flag and the Texas flag, which will be led this morning by Councilmember Thomas. So first, I'm going to recognize Councilmember Basil Dua from District 7, introduce our guest who's here to give today's invocation. And if we could please rise for the invocation, we'll have that and then the pledges.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. All right. Good morning, everyone. Reverend Lelius A. Johnson was born in Dallas, Texas, to the parents of Reverend Walter Johnson, Sr. and Mrs. Dorothy Nell Johnson. Reverend Johnson is married to Carlette Renee Johnson. Together, they are parents of four daughters and two granddaughters. Reverend Johnson is a graduate of Wilmer Hutchins High School. Go Hutch! He earned a Bachelor's of Arts in Biblical Studies and a Master of Arts in Theology at Criswell College in Dallas, Texas. Pastor Johnson has also done additional studies at Southwestern Baptist Theology Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas. Reverend Lelius A. Johnson was saved in 1967 and called the gospel ministry and was called to the gospel ministry in 1983. He served Wesley Chapel Baptist Church in Willis Point, Texas, as pastor from 1987 to 1992. In August of 1992, Reverend Johnson was called to pastor the St. Paul Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas, where he currently serves. Thank you for being here with us this morning, Reverend Johnson.
Shall we pray? Gracious God, our Father, it's again we come before your precious throne, and as we come with all thanksgiving and honor, glory to you. We come now and we pray your blessings on everything that we do today. I thank you, Lord, for this great city, and then I thank you for these servants of yours who serve this city. I thank you for our mayor and our council. And then, Lord, I pray that everything that they do today will be to promote this city. I pray, Lord, that you would give them insight, give them courage, give them, dear Father, the proper thoughts. And when you do it, and we know you will, we'll be careful to give your name the praise. For we ask it in that name that is above all names, in the name of your Son and our Savior, we pray. Amen.
Amen. Chair recognizes Councilmember Thomas for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you very much. You may be seated. There are no announcements or special presentations. Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This morning, your first five registered speakers will be Marcus Russell, Diana Ramirez, Jean Batty, Isaac Steen, and Eddie Probst. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Johnson only. Also, if you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, Marcus Russell.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the City Council. My name is Marcus Russell, a.k.a. better known as Marcus X. I'm campaign manager for Devontae D. Peters. We ran for District 3 City Council seat in the last election period. I am also co-founder of the Community Engagement Specialist Program in what is known as Highland Hills area of Oak Cliff and Dallas, but we are also in the Stop 6 area of Fort Worth. Many of you are aware of this program because my colleague, Devontae Peters, who is also co-founder with me, came to the City Council meeting in White Rock, and he urged the city to get behind us and support this program, to which we have received thunderous applause. This response signaled to us that the council saw the value and need for such a program in our city, since we had already caught the attention of ABC and NBC affiliates. After all the praise, Mr. Peters was invited to St. Luke Methodist Church last weekend. I came along with him for support because I was told they wanted advice to ask some questions about our platform and how we became recognized as a positive impact in the community that we serve, with numbers to back it up. He consulted them and answered the questions they asked and gave them an overall review of the blueprint. Then after about 2 days, a friend told me he saw a commercial, well, a news commercial with my face and Devontae's face, with the story about the mayor using a grant for a task force. I must say I was a little perplexed because I hadn't heard of it or even seen the news story, so I started searching articles and found out the Reverend Bowie of the St. Luke Methodist Church, of the church who his committee and board, who we had just revived, I guess was so impressed. The reason I'm saying this is because the members of the church, who are also politicians, told us they had been discussing our program weeks before. So I must assume that the Reverend spoke to the mayor, and because of this, offered the mayor offered a grant to develop a task force to create a program similar to the one we have already established. Well, Mayor Johnson, I am here to say that recreating the wheel doesn't have to be recreated again for such a successful program with proven results, which we've already done. We appreciate Reverend Bowie and his recognition and calling the mayor's office to attention of our program. He's willing to provide a grant to develop a program, and we're more happy to take it from here. Thank you for helping us open the door, and since we have already developed a program, we don't have to lose any time. We can hit the ground running and begin to replicate our program throughout the city. We are prepared to offer consultation, management services, and the best practices as needed to help recreate our intellectual property in different areas of the city. We feel as citizens of this great city, it behooves us to do so, because lowering violent crime doesn't just benefit us, it benefits all residents of the community we serve. With our program, we have made a constant big difference. Since we implemented this program, the community feels much safer. We have documented proof that the crime in our community we currently serve has significantly dropped since we started our program and engagement program. This is significant because before we arrived in this area, it had one of the highest incidents of violent crimes in the city and really the highest murder rate in these apartments. And though the state troopers had never came to the Highland Hills area, we were still able to dramatically reduce crime in the Highland Hills area without the assistance of the state troopers. Our program is unique because we don't address the symptoms, which are violence and crime. We also focus on the disease, which is poverty, by finding resources for people, problems, and not capitalizing off them. Growing up in impoverished communities.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry your time's expired, but I appreciate it very much. And I understand that we've actually been in contact with you, our office, so we want to talk to you more about the task force.
Okay, yeah, they did recently call us.
I appreciate you being here this morning. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Diana Ramirez.
Good morning. My name is Diana Ramirez, and I live in District 8. I'm also the Civic Engagement Director for Workers' Defense. I'm here to talk to you all about the budget and that saying of putting your money where your mouth is. The city of Dallas is ranked number 3 in child poverty and number 1 in deportations. Both of these issues affect me greatly. Some of the immigrants that have been wrongfully arrested or that have been arrested for very minor crimes, but yet they're placed in a deportation pipeline as soon as they come in contact with a police officer, creating a devastating consequence for their families. We need an anti-poverty budget, a budget that can attack the root cause of crime, poverty. a budget that reflects and supports the different kind of policies that have been passed in this same building. People don't want to see nor need more police officers in the streets. We need more services. In 2018, the city of Dallas passed a resolution of being a welcoming city. It's time that that money gets allocated for a legal defense fund to help the wrongfully arrested immigrants currently being held in the detention center or jail away from their families. Detention centers are the worst. They're jails that provide very little medical attention to the detainees. My brother was in one of them for almost 5 months. And only the situation that they live there is that only two documented people can go visit them once a week for 1 hour. That creates very devastating mental health for the detainees. Our family members are being kidnapped every day, and they have very little resources to fight back with the poverty wages that are paid. A lot of the times, they can't even afford a legal representation. Everyone should have due process. It is in our U.S. Constitution. The city of Dallas can and should do better by allocating money for this vulnerable community. I want to add something else. Last month, a new splash park opened very near to my house in District 8. This splash park has brought so much joy, not only to my children, but to our neighborhood, and has brought us together. I can only imagine what a 24-hour rec center could mean to teenagers and seniors that need a safe place to go every day. Crime can be reduced with these types of investments in our neighborhoods. And lastly, a few months ago, the PASIC time policy passed here. It is very, very important that someone continues to oversee the implementation of that policy to make sure that workers are given the right that they earned earlier this year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jean Betty.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council members. My name is Jean Batty. I'm a parent of one of the players on the Dallas Junior Wheelchair Maverick team. The wheelchair basketball program was formed in 1979 and has expanded rapidly over the last 10 years. This year, we'll have three teams, two varsity division teams that play on a 10-foot hoop, and one prep team. The program currently serves 45 disabled athletes. We are the largest community junior wheelchair program in the nation that's not directly supported by a hospital or state government. We have a no-pass, no-play policy with regular grade report check-ins prior to each tournament. The Dallas Junior Mavericks have won numerous awards. They won the national championships in 2009, 2010, and 2011. Two of our coaches have won the Ed Owen Coach of the Year Award. And in 2011, our program won the Courage Center Award of Merit for Outstanding Leadership in Developing a Junior Division. Currently, nine of our players are playing on the college level with athletic scholarships. Three are at Mizzou on the men's team, one is on Alabama on the women's team, two are at Illinois men and women, two are at UTA men and women, and one is at Southwest Minnesota State. Other notable program graduates are Tim Nagel with a master's from Illinois, who currently teaches adaptive sports in Seattle. Robert Herkenkat graduated from Georgetown with a bachelor's and then got his master's from USC. Bobo Nickelberry has been on the adult Dallas Mavericks men's wheelchair basketball team, and they have won the Nationals eight times in the last 11 years. In the past 6 years, our blue team has placed in the top five in the country four times with four academic All-Americans. But the biggest benefit that I want to impress on you is that for most of our kids, this is their only opportunity to play on a team sport with countless intangible benefits. They get to be true athletes, winning and losing against their peers. This is priceless. Why am I here? Some of you may not be aware that we do not have a gym as of after November 9th due to the renovation scheduled on the Bachman Center. I've been working as a parent trying to find replacement space. It is a very, very big ask to find 6 hours of court time on a Saturday. And many of our kids travel a great distance to play with us. I know the Recreation Department is working on this problem, but time is running short. Help us bring another national championship home to Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you.
Isaac Steen.
Good morning. My name is Isaac Steen, and I wanted to talk about the budget. And one of the things going on with the budget is I'm an African-American living in the southern sector of town, and the budget seems to always fall short when it comes down to spending money in the southern sector. One of our problems is with the police department. Now, there's a proposal that want to increase taxes to increase the pay for the police department. And have no problem with paying police for doing their job. On Monday of this week, I was traveling on I-35 North, coming through Red Oak City Limit. I was the victim of a road rage incident when I was run off the road. Called 911, and the Red Oak dispatcher talked to me till I got to Lancaster and said that he could no longer handle the situation. Traveled on through Lancaster to Lancaster Police Department 911, handled the incident and told me we was going into Dallas. If I wanted to stop and talk to their officer, I could stop. Or I was following the victim, you know, the perpetrator of this crime, had his license plate number down, giving it to the police as we traveled. As we come up on 20, I was turned over to the Dallas Police Department. The Dallas 911 operator told me that we have a no-following clause. I told her that the person exited off on Camp Wisdom and 35 and pulled into the Exxon station, and I was sitting there behind them. She said, sit in your car until the police department get here. I got a unit dispatched to you. After about 10 minutes, I was told that I would have to get off the phone with the 911 operator, which was protecting me and making sure I was safe, and I was getting a phone call from the Red Oak Police Department, which he told me to get out of the vehicle and walk around and see would I have any damage, and he told me that he could not do anything for me because of the fact that I only had a scratch mirror. Well, I told him that I called in a 911 road rage, and I was wondering how was he able to just separate me from the 911 operator, putting my life in jeopardy with someone in a vehicle who I know who he was, didn't know who he was, and he had a big German Shepherd dog in the car. Got the phone call from Red Oak, and he told me that the guy that was, I guess he had talked to the guy. So, but he had told me previously that he could not handle the situation. It was out of his jurisdiction. Upon yesterday, I tried to get information about this situation, but the Dallas police would not do anything or give out any information. So me, being an African-American, why would I agree to give him a raise? Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Eddie Probst. Leroy Pena.
Good morning. My name is Leroy Pena. I'm the National Director of the Red-Handed Warrior Society, and I'm also an enrolled member of the Lipan Apache Tribe of Texas. Now, I was here last week when there was an exchange between one of the council members and a speaker here last week. Now, my question is, what is the definition of hate speech? Now, has that been defined? Could it hate speech be to support a movement that is holding a particular government accountable for his mistreatment of a people? Now, you know, it was a pretty bad exchange, and even a vulgar gesture was made towards this speaker. Now, we expect more out of our council members, and to your credit, Mayor Johnson, you kind of collected everything and you kind of shut it down pretty good. But this council member has yet to be disciplined for what happened last week, because You know, supporting something like BDS, in my opinion, is not hate speech. Because of what is occurring right now in that region, to support it is not a hateful act. So, you know, the community is looking for something to happen here, because we can't have council members shouting down speakers and, you know, saying words like hate speech when all they're doing is expressing their opinion. Now, you know, I'm Apache, so we know what it's like to be forced off our land. So we do have, you know, we can empathize what's going on with the Palestinians. Now, to support their cause, it does not make me an anti-Semite. It means that I am against the oppression of a people the same way that my people were once oppressed. Now, we're going to be waiting these few days coming up to see what the city actually does as far as disciplining this council member. Because you can't be flipping the bird at somebody that's speaking. You know what I mean? This is Dallas. We expect more out of our council members than that kind of behavior. That behavior has no place in the council chamber. And shouting somebody down like that, too, it lacks class. I'm telling you right now. You know, so we look to y'all to be an example to the rest of us on how to behave. A lot of you are from different political affiliations, yet you seem to get along pretty good. But we can't have people acting and things occurring like what happened last week. Thank you.
Sorry, before we go on, I do want to say something about that. I appreciate you bringing this point up, and I wanted to say this. I'm the presiding officer of this body, and I take responsibility for maintaining the decorum in this room and in our meetings. So I want to apologize for not doing a better job at my job of maintaining decorum. I'll do better. I'm new. I'm trying my best. So I'm going to work on that. We're reviewing our rules right now. We're working on how to make sure that our meetings run as efficiently as possible and that we're the best council we can be. So I'll take all these things you've said under advisement when we're looking at our rules revisions. We have things about decorum and things in our rules, and we're going to remind everyone of what our rules say, and we're going to hold that out as a goal to do better. So I just want to say, because I'm the one that these comments are directed at this point in our meetings, that we're going to do better, and we're working on it. And, you know, I appreciate you bringing the
At the very least, Mr. Crenshaw is owed an apology for what happened, you know. He's a very highly respected member of the African-American community.
Understood.
Who also, you know, does work for other
communities. I appreciate it. Now, I just wanted to say that I understand, so I'm dealing with it. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes your first five registered speakers. We'll now move to your voting agenda. Agenda item one is approval of minutes of the August 21st, 2019 City Council meeting.
Any discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? Minutes are approved.
Agenda item two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning we have several full council and individual appointments for the 2019-21 term. Nominees for full council appointment to the Civil Service Board, Glenn E. Newman is being nominated by Councilmember Kleinman. To the Cypress Waters Municipal Management District for the 1923 term, Chris Housewright is being nominated by Councilmember Narvaez. Mr. Housewright meets the agent, employee with direct or indirect interest in property. To the Landmark Commission alternate members, Edward Stone is being nominated by Councilmember Kleinman. Mr. Stone meets the history special qualification. To the Reinvestment Zone 3 Board, Oak Cliff Gateway, Gregory Lynn McCormick is being nominated by Councilmember West, and Alexander Anatole Cosero is being nominated by Councilmember West. To the Reinvestment Zone 4 Board, Cedars Area, Philip T. Robinson is being nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. To the Reinvestment Zone 14 Board, Skillman Corridor, John P. Dean, Gregory Duval, William S. Boyd are all being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem McGue. To the Reinvestment Zone 15 Board, Fort Worth Avenue, Kyle R. Ward is being nominated by Councilmember Narvaez. To the Reinvestment Zone 19 Board, Cypress Waters, Victor Toledo is being nominated by Councilmember Narvaez. Nominees for individual appointments. To the Board of Adjustment, Taylor Alexandra Adams is being nominated by Councilmember Basil Dua. To the Arts and Culture Advisory Commission, Yolanda R. Alameda is being nominated by Councilmember Narvaez. Ms. Alameda meets the Cultural Institute Management Special Qualification. To the Community Development Commission, Ken Montgomery is being nominated by Councilmember Blackman. To the City Plan and Zoning Commission, Joanna L. Hampton is being nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, and James Tipton Housewright is being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem McGue. To the Youth Commission, Judith Gonzalez is being nominated by Councilmember West, and Osadulo Gabriel Osa-Wimwenze is being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem McGue, and Jack Menagudi is being nominated by Councilmember Mendelson.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? The nominations are all approved.
Mr. Mayor, your voting and briefing agenda continues.
Okay. We're now on to our briefing meeting. And I have quite a bit that I need to read into the record. So just bear with me here. This is some required language per our charter and whatnot. So this morning our agenda includes several items related to the fiscal year 2019-20 and fiscal year 2020-21 biennial budget. The items include a public hearing, consideration of additional amendments and straw votes, and a first reading ordinance for our consideration and approval. First, we'll consider agenda item number 3, which is a public hearing to receive comments on the tax rate. We'll hear from any residents that have signed up to provide comments on the property tax rate and then from other visitors wishing to speak. After the public hearing, we'll move to briefing A, which is consideration of additional amendments to the budget and straw votes. Ms. Rage will walk us through the amendment process and will be available to answer any questions. The first amendment that we're going to consider today is a proposed budget amendment from the city manager, and we're going to have a straw vote on that. Then we'll open the floor to discuss amendments submitted by Friday's deadline and hold straw votes on those items. Members will have the opportunity to introduce additional amendments from the floor. Once this discussion is complete, we'll take a short break if we need to so that the city attorney and the city manager and the city secretary can prepare for action on agenda item number 4. Next, Ms. Johnson, our city secretary, is going to read agenda item number 4, which incorporates all of the amendments that we do today, including a summary of any changes that we approve into the record. This item is required by city charter and is considered the first reading of the fiscal year 2019-2020 budget ordinance. I'll then entertain a motion in a second from the council, and we'll vote to adopt the budget on first reading. We currently have on our schedule an optional meeting for September the 10th on the budget, but if we get most of our work done today, we won't have to have that meeting. On September 18th is when we will come back together to consider the budget ordinance on second reading and any other budget-related items. It's important to note that action on agenda item number 4 is an official action, not a straw vote. It's an official action. We'll be passing the budget ordinance on first reading when we do that. When we adopt the budget on first reading, what we're doing is giving the public notice that the budget, as it was, we're giving them public notice of the budget as it was proposed and all the changes that we've made thus far in the process. We'll publish that ordinance that we passed today for the public's review in the newspaper. And by charter, we will publish a list of the changes that the council made to the original city manager's proposed budget as a separate schedule. This is all required. We will then adopt the budget ordinance on second reading at that September 18th meeting. The city council may still make changes to the budget ordinance all the way up until we adopt it on the 18th. And with that, Madam Secretary, I'll ask if you could please read agenda item number 3 into the record for our public hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Agenda item 3 is a public hearing to receive comments on a 78 cents per $100 valuation property tax rate for the 2019-20 fiscal year, as discussed on August 13, 2019. City Council will vote to adopt a tax rate on Wednesday, September 18, 2019 at Dallas City Hall, 6 East South at 9 o'clock a.m. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak on this item? No speakers, Mr. Mayor? We need a motion to close the public hearing.
Is there I will entertain a motion. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? The hearing is closed. We're now on to our briefing item A, which is amendment to the budget, and I'll turn it over to Ms. Raich to walk us through the amendment process.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Hope you had a nice Labor Day weekend. The budget amendments that we will consider for straw votes today are the ones that we distributed on Friday evening. And we left a copy at each of your seats as well this morning. In addition, left the cards, the red or hot pink and the green cards, for the straw voting process to make it easier for us to determine that we have 8 votes. So again, as we move through and do the straw votes, it would be helpful if you could hold up your card and keep it up until the city secretary has had a chance to count the straw votes, and we have as well, to determine which things move forward. With that, I don't have a lot of introductory remarks. I thought we could move right into things. The first amendment for consideration is the city manager's amendment, and I'd like to turn it over to the city manager, T.C. Broadnax, to make some to introduce his amendment.
Thank you, Elizabeth, and good morning, Mayor and Council. Just briefly, I know we've had some in-depth conversations over the last week around the proposed budget and the impacts of many of the amendments that had heretofore been made. And so I wanted to just share just very high level what the proposed amendment that I would offer and hope council would consider does as it relates to this budget process. First and foremost, I believe that the current amendment ensures sustainability for fiscal years 20 and 21, the second year of the biennial. It keeps the property tax rate at the fiscal year 2019 rate of 77.67 per $100 in valuation, rather than increase it by 1/3 of 1 cent as initially proposed. It does restore the basic human and social services that Dallas residents have voiced as a need, and it continues the momentum to make Dallas a more empathetic, ethical, excellent, and equitable city. The amendments that were previously approved on August 26th, they did result in a budget shortfall of $5 million in the following fiscal year. I do believe there were some one-time eliminated expenses that carry forward as recurring in the following years. This budget amendment addresses those issues. It also balances, as I said before, both years, and with SB 2 becoming effective next year, it ensures, at least at this point, based on the budget estimates that we have, that our budget would be balanced if we continue the current level of services. And lastly, I'll just say on a very high level, it does continue funding the many services in the Office of Community Care that address the drivers of poverty, provide senior services that were being transferred from CDBG, and as well it continues our earned income tax credit programs that were being transitioned from the Office of Economic Development, as well as it continues our teen pregnancy prevention programs. Rather than reducing at great sacrifice many of the offices that were providing some of the other services and initiative support, such as the business diversity, the equity and ethics, and welcoming communities and innovation areas, the amendment lays out several other strategic and targeted reductions in those areas that, again, will preserve and allow for the tax rate not to exceed 77.67. There are reductions in non-direct delivery programs. We did find a way to fund, through reductions, the fire ladder truck at fire station number 18, the Parks and Rec youth access and after-school programs. As council had previously recommended, we did put back in funding to support an additional football game during the state fair. We moved up, based on council guidance, the additional planners in sustainable development and construction to support our authorized hearing program. And then we reallocated funding within the homeless solutions to focus on unaccompanied youth experiencing homelessness as previously requested by the council. And then we've identified some resources for a path forward to begin addressing certain types of environmental issues and land use challenges, as well as zoning matters in District 8. And so with that, I will be available for any questions you might have and look forward to this process. Thank you.
So previously you had asked for a motion and a second in order to consider it and then do the straw vote.
No. What I'm going to ask is, before we actually go into discussion on a main motion on this, that someone, if someone's interested in moving the city manager's amendment, they can, but we also want to have any friendly amendments to it offered before we open the discussion, so we don't have to go through the amendment to the amendment process. It's actually proper to have amendments to this motion before we open it to the body at this point. So who's moving?
I move, Mr. Okay. Mayor.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Say, Secretary, make a note of who moved and seconded. Now, are there friendly amendments that need to be offered to this? Anyone? I'm going to recognize Councilman Resendez first.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to offer a friendly amendment to, instead of the proposed amendment that I had, to include it in the use of funds in place of adding the firefighters for the ladder truck at fire station number 18. It's my understanding that there are some savings there, and the hotspots would be $238,000. So that's the friendly amendment I propose.
Okay. The way a friendly amendment works is it doesn't need to be discussed with the body if it's okay with the person who made the original motion. So who is being credited with the original motion? But Councilwoman Gates, is that amendment acceptable to you?
And I'll add.
You can, but my point is that at this point, it's just he's offering a friendly amendment to your motion, so it doesn't have to be voted on.
I need to understand if there were savings.
The savings is in overtime in the fire department. The fire truck does cost what it costs. However, because the fire department has had less attrition this year, they have relooked at their overtime and have identified that they could have some savings there. And so that is, it would be fire department personnel savings
that you're asking to be used for.
Let me clarify.
Okay.
And so, can I clarify?
Yeah, please.
Thank you. So when the original amendment was made on the 26th to add, I believe, $1.1 million, half a year of funding to support the ladder truck, that is where the 1.1 came as a half a year. We basically looked at the sustainability of we needed to fund the program and not delay hiring until a half a year. We've already hired the firefighters. They're on staff, which has resulted in a reduction in the overall utilization of overtime. And so that is where we need to actually and recommend that we move that budget back to 1.8. We use city manager math, 1.1 times 2, and after further analysis and John Fortune, as well as the chief's assessment of where they are on the cost to provide that service for the full year based on the new information around how that's impacted overtime and the lack of the need for it in many cases throughout the department, We believe that 1.8 would be sufficient in 2019.
On this line item, you...
From the 2.2.
Yes, from the 2.2. We're recommending going from... Yes, and so okay. he's recommending to move 238 out of that. That's a savings of $400,000 that, again, we put in this amendment to support council's previous amendment. We don't believe we need 2.2, so there is $400,000 in flexibility. And so I think he is...
And you're recommending what was the amount? $238. Well, if you're adding it to this, it would be taking, we would be amending the 2.2.
To 1.8.
So, and then, okay, and then putting and adding 238 for more hotspots.
So it's a reduction of 400,000.
Reduction, and but we're not yet 238 yeah.
from that.
Okay.
And then the tax rate reduction for the rest.
And then the tax rate, what would you do with the rest of the money?
Yeah, that's the next.
Okay.
So are you okay with that?
Yes.
Because if you're not, we have to take it up as a normal amendment.
No, I could agree to that.
Okay. Is there another friendly amendment? Mr. Kleinman, you were next. Did you have a friendly amendment?
I want to start with just a question, but I think I do have a friendly amendment. I thought we decided in previous straw votes that we're going to eliminate the Echo Creative Industries, but it did not show up in this amendment, in Mr. Broadnax's amendment.
Councilman,
I thought we straw voted. First of all, confirm or deny that we straw voted that in the affirmative.
There was a straw vote that considered that as well as several other items. And so let me speak specifically to the creative industries item, just for clarity. Based on my understanding, there's two pieces that I would say to City Council why it's not showing up now. One is I believe it would be my recommendation that we spend time and go back and have a conversation with Visit Dallas, who I believe is acceptable of receiving this and package that particular item in with the other amendments that we may make to their agreement. Secondly, the $321,000 that was identified in the original amendment and voted on, after further review and reflection, it did not consider that we receive revenue already from Visit Dallas in the amount of $100,000 and then $70,000 from Convention and Event Services. And there is a actual real cost that had been allocated from other general fund related areas, i.e., portions of the director's salary, the assistant directors, and the program person that ran it. The net delta in true savings to the general fund is about $50,000 because we would have to then move out the expenses that were being offset by the revenue from Visit Dallas and others to then back to the general fund to support the salaries of at least the director and the assistant director, which were being offset. So the delta is about $50,000, not the $321,000 in real expense.
Yeah, okay, so I guess I'd like to make a friendly amendment. I just don't see the need for this at all in the city of Dallas, and so I don't quite get all the math, but I put forth an amendment just to eliminate that office and all city general fund-related expenses, and right now that's listed in the budget as $321,000. So that's my friendly amendment. If you want to make, like you said, city manager math, fine, but we don't need to be doing that. So that's my friendly amendment, is just to eliminate that from our budget. And if Visit Dallas wants to do it, they can do it. I don't care. I don't think we should be doing it.
It's up to Councilwoman Gates on the friendly amendment to deter motion.
Is that part of your other amendments that we're going to take up later?
Let's take it up later. The reason I brought it up now is because we did straw vote it, and it did not make it into the city manager's big amendment.
Okay, so she's not accepting as a friendly amendment at this time. Mr. Magoo, Deputy Mayor, excuse me.
So I was not listening to the end, but did we already talk about the friendly amendment to make the rest of the savings 162 to tax rate reduction?
No.
That's what I would like to make that. Thank you.
Okay, so that amendment's been accepted. So now, seeing that there's no more, I think, people wishing to add friendly amendments, can we restate the amended motion now?
Mr. Mayor. I have a friendly amendment to add. sorry, I was going to do it later, but since we're playing this game right now, I think this is a good time to try to do it, is to friendly amendment to reduce the North Texas Commission membership from $50,000 to $25,000, and to add $50,000 for the Senior Affairs Commission for their support for their expenses, because they have zero funding. So it's something similar to our Youth Commission having funding so that they can take care of their expenses. Our seniors have $0 to take care of their expenses. So it actually would only take $25,000 away from that 162 to still add a tax reduction.
So he's offering that as a friendly amendment. If she doesn't accept it, it can be taken up separately after we vote on.
I'm not going to accept it now.
Okay. We'll take it up separately. Mr. Atkins? Okay. All right. So seeing no more people wanting to offer friendly amendments, can we restate the motion as it's been modified by the two friendly amendments that Councilwoman Gates accepted, and then we'll have discussion. Anyone here to Councilwoman, is the city CFO going to do that, or can you do it? Restate your amended motion. I think maybe she can do it.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to figure out what we've done.
Right.
Okay.
So, okay. The changes are in DFR personnel expenses, reducing those from $2.2 million to $1.8 million. Adding a use of funds of hotspots at $238,000, and adding a use of funds at for tax rate reduction in the amount of $162,000. The amendment is still balanced.
Does that sound right? All right, now discussion.
Right, it's there. They increased the top line number from 4524 to 4686.
All right, so the floor is open for discussion. Mr. Narvaez.
I'm sorry.
This is on Amendment 54 as amended with the friendly amendments that we just discussed. Any discussion? Right. Mr. Magoo.
So just to say this, I know the city manager has made this clear, I think publicly and privately, but the part I have the biggest concern about this was taking the money from the potential hiring of additional officers, but we've been affirmed that we will find a way, no matter what, that we will not be held back from hiring additional police officers in this budget based on reducing this particular amount. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Basil Dua.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to give some thanks to the city manager and staff for listening to our amendments and the process that had. It looks like that we found a good middle ground, and it was able to appease the majority of the requests that were given. So I just wanted to say thank you for listening and acting on that. That was really awesome, so I appreciate that.
Councilwoman Gates.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, City Manager, for bringing this forward. I had a question on the hotspots for library, because we've added those and expanded. And I think you've all shared with us where we have households that don't have internet access. So when we share a hotspot, you might be able to answer this, Shani. With somebody, do they have full access to the internet, or can we limit the access?
There will be filters.
There will be filters?
There will be filters.
So, okay. Because I know the primary purpose of this is for either job searches or people or kids using educational, but can we block it from any?
Correct. And let me add to that, Councilwoman, that filters have improved. You know, there was a time when we resisted because it would filter out things that were also educational.
Right.
But we feel pretty comfortable, and this has been used in other library systems.
Like we have it at our current libraries.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Mr. Atkins?
I just want to make a suggestion, just a comment.
you know, I was kind of in doubt that, you know, in my community and the majority of my people, my community said, do a tax rate. And I had a 6 town hall meeting and 5 of them, you know, saying, hey, we need to increase the tax rate in order to make sure that we get our equity, our fair share of the southern part of Dallas, especially my district. And I just want to kind of thank the colleagues and around this horseshoe and the city manager that we talk about public safety, but I see in this this tax saving that we have not forgot about our youth and our children who go to school, especially with after school program, the youth asset to the park and recs, and also the homeless, you know, for the youth. And those are things that my district can see that, but also is that the district not divided by 14. So thank you for looking at that opportunity. Thank you.
Mr. West.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be supporting the motion and the amendments. I want to echo what Council Member Bazalduo said with Ms. Rach and her excellent team of hardworking folks on putting this together, and to TC for finding the cuts that I think most of us can live with. And I'm really excited about this. I want to make one thing clear to a lot of folks who had reached out to me is this amendment does restore the plastic bag fee, which helps fund the climate action plan implementation. So that will be a part of this amendment if it's supported today. In addition to that, we had talked a lot about Shingle Mountain and making sure we do something about it, right? And going forward, the last item on the right above the library hotspots on the spreadsheet, planning and urban design, urban land use, my understanding is that is to put forth long-range planning in certain areas of Dallas and hopefully starting with the area around Shingle Mountain. So I'm excited about that. Thank you.
Mr. Resendez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had a question about the hotspots.
Four.
Whoever can answer them, I believe is Mr. Zapata.
Yes, sir.
What are we doing to get the word out so that folks know that this service is available?
We will be communicating with all of our partners at our libraries. Our libraries are like little community centers. So we will be spreading the word through our friends groups and all the groups that come through there, as well as the public school systems, which we are aware are also piloting a hotspot program, and we want to be collaborative with them. So we will do our best to get the word out and using best practices to do that. Joe, anything to add?
And that's including DISD and non-DISD,
correct,
other educational
correct
institutions?
All public schools.
Right. And initially the plan was to provide services at 3 libraries?
Correct. It's a pilot.
Right.
It is a pilot in 3 libraries.
And how were those locations selected?
We looked at our data to see where there was the greatest need in terms of broadband and where people come in and use the Internet and circulation and whatnot. And so we arrived at those 3 locations, and we will do this as a pilot with the intent of growing it, looking for additional grant funds, seeking more funding in future years as we prove that it's viable.
And so initially the locations are West
Initially
Dallas?
The locations are, yeah, Dallas West, MLK, and Highland Hills.
And so I'm the one that passed out these maps here so that folks can look at the percentage of households with no Internet access between 2013 and in 2017, and I mean, if you look at the difference in between the north and the south, there are pockets in the north, obviously, that lack Internet access. But when you look at the south, you see there's a lot of dark, right, a lot of colors. And when I look at the need, it looks like Southeast Dallas also has great need. So I'd like for you all in the future to understand that people do exist there, and we should have had the pilot there initially also. And that's kind of what's kind of sparked my interest in looking at this topic here. And I do want to thank my colleague, Ms. Mendelson, Councilwoman. You know, you were talking about Internet access and all that, and I share your passion with that. And I also wanted to share with you all a map of the Dallas Public Library system. I was looking at the different dark spots on this map, and obviously it's not my job to tell you guys what to do, where to do it, you know. The how is up to you guys, but I did identify Pleasant Grove Library, Prairie Creek Library, Kleberg Riley, Skyline, Paul Lawrence Dunbar, Polk/Camp Wisdom, Hampton, Illinois, Arcadia Park, Bachman Lake, Forest Green, and Timber Glen as potential locations that can provide access throughout our city to folks. I know I'm over my time, but y'all know the internet access makes it easier for people to seize economic opportunities. Thank you all so much.
You were on such a good roll. I didn't want to stop you. Did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I just really wanted quickly, to say, Mayor? Is there a way that Councilman Resendez, this is something he was passionate about and really worked really hard to get this amendment. Is there a way that we can add one more site to that pilot in his area, one of those libraries? Is there a way that we can get that done? I'm sure there is, but that's something that I'd advocate for and help you out.
Thank you.
Again, Councilman, I will just add to that we are considering this a pilot program, and we will be looking for grant funding to support this, and we'll be working with DISD, who we know is also rolling out a hotspot program for high school students. It's more focused. We want to grow this program, and we know that there is need. So we will continue touching base with the council on that as we do this.
No, so that's not a yes or a no. It's just kind of like we're going to try. Is there a way that we can get Jaime Resendez and his district a hotspot addition? It's just one.
Okay. Mr. Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of things. First, I think I remember seeing either in the preliminary budget or something about, I think it's Elizabeth, community engagement, was it something, a position, something like that for community engagement was in the original budget?
There was a position in the Office of Public Affairs, I believe, if that's what you're speaking to, for public engagement specialist. That's what's on this amendment as a source of funds.
Okay, I'm trying to.
It is.
I'll look for that one.
Row 11, 103-201.
Okay, so the recommendation is to eliminate that position?
It was a new position. It's not got an incumbent.
Right. Okay. A lot of things that, you know, I think about the comment that was just asked about how we're going to get the word out. We talk about a lot how we're going to get the word out. And so I'm going to give some real heavy consideration in terms of that, because that's been an issue. Councilmember Atkins said a number of times about, you know, needing a marketing department or something like that for the city of Dallas. But my time is almost up. I did want to say that with this amendment, it was a disgrace, and it was something I took personal. That individual saw a need to eliminate several potential offices. And this is not new news. Those of you sitting around, you know how I feel about this. And I prefer in the future, some of you came and talked to me, you let me know up front. I felt like I was blindsided by that. If you have some concerns about certain offices, a lot of work was done before you got here, no offense. And I, out of respect, I appreciate in the future if you come and share those concerns with me. Before, we have a number of people who are here. My time is up. Hopefully I have another chance to speak, but who are advocating for some of these services, and they do a great job because we're trying to end homelessness here in the city of Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I want to just go back to the topic of the internet access. I very much appreciate my colleague, Mr. Resendez, bringing this to, you know, our attention. It's almost shameful that now the city has to step in to provide. It's good that we're doing it, but provide access to the internet where providers who are government regulated and authorized by our government to provide those services in a almost monopolistic form, and they're just not providing services in our seventh sector. It's awful. And in the meantime, they continue to push down our ability to help our constituents by limiting, for example, the fees that we charge for our franchise fees and the ability to just even provide service where they're not providing it. So, Mary Jo, thanks for bringing this forward. I'm supportive, Mr. Resendez, of your amendments, but this is a situation where
we're having to do something because the folks that should be providing these services are not, and that's really unfortunate.
Thanks. Mr. Arnold?
Just quickly, I think what we must commit to, because it is a travesty that more than 30 years, the southern sector and other communities that, that some of you represent are underserved. But where we need to begin, if it is indeed that we are being duped, is that we need to get out and start lobbying our state and federal officials to deliver. And then also we need to begin to treat those communication suppliers have a different approach in terms of talking to them and giving them some of the things that they asked us to do. So I think we have to be more aggressive in terms of lobbying for our constituents to close that gap. So I appreciate it so much. And also, since I was given this note, so that we can communicate, you want me to mention this on Spanish speakers, that we need to make sure if you have any Spanish-speaking members in the audience, we need to reach out. Thank you so very much. Was that clear, Mayor? We need to reach. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
Ms. Bowser, did you have a point of order or a point of information or anything?
No.
I think we're limiting just to 1 minute for this round. Anything else? All right. Anybody else who hasn't spoken at all who wants to speak on for or against Amendment 54 as amended? All right, seeing none, you indicate your support for the amendment by raising a green card. There's more than eight. The amendment prevails. Ms. CFO?
Yes.
For items 55 through 91, and I'll ask you this, Mr. Kleinman, is it possible, would you be amenable to this idea to indicate to our CFO which of these you would like to lay out so she can actually read them sort of sequentially into the record, and then I'd be willing to allow you to take 6 minutes instead of three, or if you need nine, to sort of walk through very quickly all of them so they'll all be laid out, and then if you want to move the question on, or have someone move the question if you don't want to do it on all of them, we can, or if you want to divide the question, that's your right too, but just to make this expeditious, would you like to just indicate which one she wants?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I appreciate that. I'd be happy to lay them out that way. I would like to vote them individually if I can get seconds on them. On the amendments, there are several that I withdrew because they were addressed either through Mr. Broadnax's amendment or we discussed them as a council further. So they're indicated here as withdrawn. The only one that I would say put back in that I had originally withdrawn was number 80 with eliminating the creative services, because I thought we had straw voted that one and got consensus on that, and then it didn't make it into the big amendment from there. So with that being said,
will you indicate to the CFO
which ones I'd like to,
which ones you want her to
right
lay out?
Right. So, let me think about 55. So let's go down to 61, 62, 65, 66. 68, 71, 72, 73, 74, 75, 76, 77, 79, 80, 81, 84.
So you're withdrawing 82?
Yes.
Yes, who's that? Mr. Basil, do it. Go ahead. I didn't see your light.
I just wanted to ask where we are currently on the tax rate.
7766.
Six. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Let's see.
Where are you, Mr. Klein? 84 was the last one?
Yes. 87.
Okay.
88. 89, and 91.
So these are the ones that you would like the CFO to
right.
lay out, and then I'm recognize you for, let's say, instead of 3 minutes, if you can do it in six, if you need nine, I'll do nine to give you the layout kind of.
I'll do my best just to just give everybody my thoughts.
Right, and then we can vote them however you'd like them, if you want to move them individually or you right. want to move them all as a group, whichever. But
okay.
this will help us, I think. So, the CFO, thank you.
So to confirm, did you make a decision on 55?
I'm not going to put that
okay.
forth. We'll withdraw that
all
one
right.
because it's just too broad.
So Amendment 61 is a $10 million reduction in the general fund for grant-funded and entitlement programs for the tax rate. Item 62 reduces the Office of Homeless Solutions by $6 million, funding a tax rate reduction. Item 65 reduces the Office of Police Oversight, Community Police Oversight, by $300,000 for a tax reduction. Item 66 reduces the Office of Environmental Quality and Sustainability by $700,000 for a tax rate reduction. Item 68 reduces the Office of Historic Preservation for $500,000 for a tax rate reduction. Item 71 reduces the Mayor and Council Office staffing by $1 million for a tax rate reduction. Item 72 defunds the civil service for a tax rate reduction. Item 73 reduces capital facilities by $400,000 for a tax rate reduction. Item 74 reduces the city attorney's office in the amount of $600,000 for tax rate. Item 75 reduces the city controller's office for $350,000 tax rate reduction. Item 76 makes the school crossing guard program self-sustaining, bills the school districts for the shortfall. It would be less than $5.3 million because we do have some revenue, but the difference would be for a tax rate reduction. Item 77 eliminates housing preservation, $1.5 million for a tax rate reduction. Item 79 reduces the Office of Budget by $200,000 for a tax rate reduction. Item 80 eliminates the Economic Development Creative Industries. There is also some revenue there we can talk about for a tax rate reduction. Item 81, Park and Recreation, reduces by $4 million. For a tax rate reduction. Item 84 closes Southern Skates, Fruitdale, Marcus Annex for $850,000 total for a tax rate reduction. Item 87 eliminates the Dallas Police Department mounted unit for tax rate reduction, $275,000. Item 88 eliminates senior dental care, $370,000 for a tax rate reduction. Item 89 eliminates senior medical transportation in the amount of $140,000 for a tax rate reduction. And item 91 eliminates certification pay in Dallas Fire Rescue and Dallas Police Department in the amount of $7.366,408 for a tax rate reduction.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
I move to separate and do them individually.
Well, if you want to move them all, I'll
okay.
let you.
Okay, I'd like to move all those that were just stated on the record.
Is there a second? All right, it's been moved and seconded. Discussion. Madam Secretary, can you give him, yeah, okay, good. Give him 6 minutes, and if we need to extend it, I'll extend it. But go ahead and explain them.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So as you can see, my biggest interest is just getting our tax rate down and being able to have a fourth year in a row that we have a tax rate reduction. So 61, this number is hard to determine really how we push stuff out of what the total number is, stuff that we've got funding from other sources, and then we push it to the general fund. I just generally am against that. I don't even know what that total number is, but as an estimate. Number 62, Office of Homeless Solutions, we've continued to ratchet up the budget on that area, and every time we do the homeless count, the number goes up. So it seems, I'm not saying there's a relationship between putting more money into homelessness and more homeless being here, but I think we've got to really rethink that. No city in the U.S. has figured out how to solve this problem, and I'm just concerned that we're putting a lot of money into something and we're not solving anything. Item 65, the Office of Police Oversight, this is a new office. I'm very supportive that we have police oversight. I think we can do it with one FTE, and we don't need to have three in there, at least starting. Bringing 66, Office of Environmental Quality, to its current level, not having an increase there. Historic preservation, Just bring that down to one FTE. It seems like it's redundant with things like Landmark Commission and off, and there's another place, Housing Preservation. It just seems they're redundant. 71, the staffing of the district offices. I know we've talked about this a lot, but folks, first of all, it seems somewhat unfair that certain council members get additional staff and some council members don't, because some council members, like myself, I'm able to adequately address my constituents. Was there a question? I am adequately able to serve my constituents by going to the rec centers several times a month and holding office hours with my current staff. I don't know why we need to have these offices, and I know we. Oh, I'm sorry. People keep asking me. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I've
got to ignore their faces.
Okay. Civil service number 72. That's just a relic of the Depression, and with so much federal and state protection of employees' help and rights, I just don't think we need it anymore. Capital facilities, just reduce it to the current level. City attorney's office, reduce it to the current level. Controller's office, reduce it to the current level. School crossing guard program, I'd like to know what that differential, but so you're right. I just say
the revenue is 2.644.
Okay, so I just say fund it at the level that we're receiving income on it. And tax rate reduction on the rest of it. If the school districts want more school crossing guards than we could provide through that funding, then I think they should step up and pay the differential. Housing preservation, again, seems redundant with historic preservation in some other areas, number 77. 79, just reduce the office budget to current levels. 80, I do not understand why we are – eliminate creative industries. Do not be misled that this is somehow helping fledgling artists. This is corporate welfare to the film industry, which is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and I just don't think we should have a role in that. 81 is really interesting. Park and Recreation, when we did the contract for Fair Park, it freed up about $7 million out of the budget, and that was how we negotiated it with the provider there. Rather than that going back to the general fund for us to be able to utilize in other areas, the Parks Board just decided they would just shell that away into their own pocket and put it on other things. I think that money should be coming back to the general fund for our uses as we decide to use it, and Parks needs to figure out within their huge budget where to take it out. Just as a point, when I start on the Park Board, several years ago, the budget there was less than $60 million. Now the budget is $100+ million. So they've seen like a 60% increase in probably the last 6 to 8 years. Just like every other department, they need to find places to do that. So I just thought that was a weird little thing that we expect to get the full $7 million back in the general fund, and we didn't. Let's see. 84, and I know several council members are really concerned about this one, and I understand why. But these three facilities I'll take them separately. Fruitdale and Marcus, if you just look at the amount of attendance at those, I mean, it's below 10,000 a year. We're spending $300,000 to run rec center and an annex that are just no one's using. So I think there's opportunity there. There were several listed. But I kind of just made that could were potential, but I just kind of drew the line at 10,000 attendees a year. And Fruitdale, I think itself, just has like 4,500 a year. I mean, come on. With regards to Southern Skates, I never understood why we even have that facility. I think it's just a leftover piece of patronage that we put out there to someone help their friend, and all of a sudden now the park department has this facility and they're just owning it and running it. I just think we should get rid of it. We shouldn't be in that business. So that's why I put that there. 87. 87's interesting. We've talked about this in the past, the mounted unit, DPD mounted unit. I mean, we're trying to get to 21st century policing in this city, and to have like an 18th century technology out there and continue to pay for it just doesn't seem to make sense to me. I know that I don't know how many priority one, priority two, priority three, priority four calls the mountain unit responds to, but I don't think too many at all. I think that I know some people think it looks great to have a uniformed officer on a horse, but it's just purely ceremonial. The other thing is I've heard people comment about that it's important for crowd control, and I would say crowd control is just another way to say intimidation and suppression of people trying to express their First Amendment rights. So I do not want to have a picture in the city of Dallas like we had, like in the, it was in the newspaper in the city of Galveston, where a black man, this just in March, a black man was shackled and walked down the street by a mounted patrol. I do not, that is a bad image, and we don't need that in Dallas. So I've advocated about this in the past, and I think we should seriously consider whether we think that's the type of policing we want to have in our city. 88, senior dental care, that's the county's responsibility. That was also, I believe, is just left over from a prior council member years ago who was a dentist and kind of got that put in, and then, of course, it just never went away. Senior medical transportation, I don't understand why we are still doing this. We've had this discussion over and over again about that it's DART's responsibility. I know we pushed a lot of it to DART, but still, we're still funding a piece of it, and I just think we need to just say, look, that DART handles that. 91, you know, 91's tough. So I guess if this budget really encompasses what the meet and confer is, I might be willing, I'd actually want to withdraw that one, but I want people to in this next year, my council members, get educated on this police and fire pay. Beyond just making, because what happened this year's meet and confer was we brought the base pay up to be competitive, and we agreed on a strategy to maintain competitiveness. But then if you add in all these extra pay grades, all these extra certifications, all these other items, we're way more than competitive. There's a lot of money that our officers are making on these little pay grade things that have been discussed. But I'll eliminate that item. I won't ask for a second on that one. It just, we need to get better educated on that. And that's my amendments.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kleinman. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you. I want to speak specifically to item 71. And I'm going to speak from personal experience.
Point of information. I'm sorry, Mr. Thomas. I'm sorry, Mr. Thomas. I just want to make sure. Are we debating all of them at one time, or are we voting on them individually? I got a little confused.
Yeah. So we're not voting yet. We are in the discussion on the whole, all these amendments, and you can identify anyone you want to comment on, and we're going to go through like the normal process. And then it's his choice. If he wants to move to divide the question and have them taken up individually, which he may, we'll do our straw vote on the individual amendments. Or he might just decide he wants to move them as a package, and we can do a straw vote on the package. But it's up to him. If he can get a second for the motion to divide the question, then we'll divide it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Thomas, just because I didn't want you to get going and then ask in the middle of your speech, so thank you very much.
No problem. No bet.
Yep, you're good.
All right. Like I was saying, I'm personally not even affected by this because one of my staff members actually mans my office 2 days, my district office 2 days a week. However, please consider the fact that there are in various council districts, and I can't just say Southern Dallas. I know my colleague to my right has a number of needs in terms of in his office, in terms of constituents coming and being able. And so depending upon, we're talking about equity. Please don't think about equality, Councilman Kleinman. Think about equity. Think about council districts where you may have a greater need of constituencies who just drop in. They just may drop in. And because of that, we may need our two staff members to be at City Hall more often. And we need additional staff or a staff member who mans that satellite office. Some council members, speaking of some of your predecessors, chose not to. They said, I can go to, you know, a Taco Cabano. I can go to a particular, you know, corner bakery or Panera Bread location. I can meet my constituents there. Well, our rec centers are overcrowded. We don't have extra space in some of our rec centers to have a office or where we can come and things of that nature. So please be mindful from an equity point of view that what the needs in District 11, for example, may not be the needs in 3, 10, 4, 8, et cetera. So let's be mindful of that when we talk about dollars. Remember a year ago, not only were you considering eliminating staff and district office, you made an amendment to eliminate funding for our district offices. And so I appreciate you not zeroing, attempting to zero out the office, but our staff and our offices are extremely important. People want to see a smiling face when they walk in that office. The offices are there because our constituents may not have the transportation to get to City Hall. And at the same time, also, they don't have to dress up because oftentimes they feel when they come to City Hall, they want to project a certain image. They want to be able to come comfortable to talk to us about whatever their needs or concerns are. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
Mr. Atkins. I'm sorry, you had a point of information.
May I? Yeah, just a point of clarification. Is there any additional staffing than the regular council members' current staffing required to run these district offices?
No, there is no additional staffing going forward. The total budget for the mayor and council office is a little over $5 million.
Right, okay. So I'm sorry, I was confused with regard to the staffing, and so knowing that you're using your regular staffing there, I'll withdraw that amendment.
So make a note that one's withdrawn from the package in case he decides to move the whole package at once.
Okay, I'm glad you withdraw that because, Lee, I think you was here when we decide that we could not use staff for our district office. You know, we went over that, and my district office is right in the center of my neighborhood, of my district. You know, my district, 58 square miles. We don't have over 1,000 people who have visited that office, but also it was a blight building, the old Highland Hills Library, you know, dilapidated. But and I'm glad that Ms. Rachel, that you did say that, number one, there is no money going from my staff, and I just wanted to recognize my two staff, Angela and Maria Salazar. They work hard, and they at the district office all the time, and we also try to get WIC in our district office, try to get more of public service there, a customer service in the district office. We have animal service there that come out to the district. So in my district, there are most people who don't want to come downtown. They just hate to come downtown and try to catch a bus, try to find a place to park. And we are the farthest part of the South beside Mr. Middleton. You know, you're probably the farthest north than me. And they love to come to the district office. And then, too, they want the resident and also the directors and employees to come to the community. When they come out to the community, they see what's going on in our community. And that's what they want to show our community and let the city know, hey, we are different. If you come out, you can address, you see what's going on. We had many personnel, director coming out and looking at our code, animal service. If when they come out to your district, I believe that it should be in every district because City Hall is not a City Hall. City Hall should be in our community, in our district, so people know what we do every day. Thank you.
Ms. Arnold?
Thank you so very much. And I concur with Councilmember Atkins in terms of the offices. I, too, am in transition, and we don't have additional staff, but as we work to meet the needs of our constituents, whether it's animal services, I know I'm in the process of working on WIC. I'm in the process of trying to get an Atmos Energy pay your bills, if you will, to subsidy, if you will, in my community. So we are servicing. I'm working with DART now to do a hiring festival. So it serves its purpose. And I wish I did have the luxury of having extra members, staff members, but I don't. But with that being said, I'm going to support Mr. Kleinman's statement in the sense that we do need to get educated as a new council about these programs before we initiate cuts. And I'm going to encourage all of my council members to vote no on all of these amendments because you have a number of amendments that hit the seniors, it hit the youth, it hits our employment. And just speaking on Southern States and Fruitdale, if we support that, we might as well, this is our official seal and logo on identifying that location as a third world country. because we're going to cut them off. The seniors don't have anywhere to go. We just put money into Fruitdale a couple of years ago, and then with this budget, you're putting in money for the youth and also seniors in some of these recreation centers and after school program. So we're being redundant, and I think we're also not thinking clearly. If we go in to cut this program, and it's in my district, and I don't support it. And so I do, and I've talked to Mr. Kleinman. He knows how I am about my District 4. I take it as an insult that you want to cut services in my community. So we're going to be all right, Mr. Kleinman, but I have to put that on for the record. We're not cutting that, okay? We're not cutting that. So with that being said, colleagues, I'm going to encourage you, whether we vote out together or if we break them up and separate, we need to vote no, support the city manager's recommendation, and let's move on with the business of this city today. Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, you've really mastered the art of disagreeing without being disagreeable. We can all learn something from you. Ms. Mendelson.
I was going to speak on item number 62, which is Office of Homeless Solutions removing $6 million. And I'll tell you, when I first glanced at it, I was excited to see $6 million, except I thought you were adding, not taking away. Since it's one of our number one priorities for the city, I can't imagine anything worse to do. We're underfunding homelessness as a city, as a county, and as a state. We have extremely vulnerable families. We have veterans. We have chronic. We have situational. We have youth. We have seniors. We have LGBT, medically fragile, if I didn't say that. And there's a lot of services that we don't even have in our spectrum, in our safety net. So this is, I think, almost outrageous. And I would just encourage everyone to help support Councilmember Thomas as he works on the partnership so that we can develop sustainable funding for homelessness. Thank you.
Oh, okay. So is there anyone else who wants to speak on for or against the any of the amendments that were laid out by Councilman Kleinman? I don't see anyone's light on, so this is your last chance if you'd like to speak on for or against any of them. Okay, Ms. Bates.
I just had a question regarding the park and recreation, that $4 million. Is there an explanation, or was that that savings just absorbed in the parks budget?
It would be a cut to the park budget. The savings from Fair Park, part of it was used to fund additional programming in the park department in the budget this year. Part of it was then put into other uses at the time when the agreement was approved. For example, $1 million had gone into LED lights. That's changed with this budget. So there were other things that it funded. The best thing I can say about that situation is that while we did not cut the budget, so to speak, by that amount of money, we were able to use it to fund services that we needed or to fund items that we needed. So it reduced the amount we might have needed to increase the tax rate in last year's budget in order to fund those items.
Do you have a number of how the growth, what the growth in the Parks Department looks like?
The Parks Department budget for the current year is $99 million, a little over $99 million. The FY20 budget proposed is about $97 million. So actually the budget is going down in the Park Department by about $2 million.
From
the adopted budget this year, which is attributable to the Fair Park agreement that is going down by $2 million because while we funded some startup costs for the Fair Park Management Agreement in the FY19 budget, those have gone away now in the FY20 budget, and we are using the savings from that for other Park Department programs and other cost of living type increases across the city for the programs that we provide.
And when you say 20, are you talking 19-20?
Yes.
You're comparing, you're not comparing the budget we're about to adopt with the biennial budget.
I'm comparing the budget you adopted already. Yes. To the one that we have proposed for adoption.
So it's going down by $2 million.
Correct.
Okay. I think the parks is actually expanding. I mean, we've brought on more trails and more parks, but I think that growth we have to kind of manage and watch when we add, and I think we're doing this in the general budget and libraries, is when we're bringing on more facilities or more parks, that it goes, our operations goes up.
Right.
So are you forecasting that going forward, both in parks and
well, the park department budget does increase in the second year of the biennial in the planned budget to a little over $100 million. So it is about a $3 million increase between the budget that will start October 1 that we're about to adopt and then the following year.
And what do you attribute that the need for that growth in that budget?
I would have to get back to you on what might be specific to that $3 million, but I would say that the park department is a lot of staffing, first of all, and so, of course, those costs for health benefits and for merit increases goes up year over year. In addition, the park department has some of the minimum wage employees that we're working on increasing that minimum wage for our full-time employees. And then also just the maintenance and operations of things that have come online, such as the aquatic centers and other new park operations, does cost additional money. But I would have to look to be more specific on that.
And what is this, talk about minimum wage, what does this budget raise the minimum wage to?
This our budget?
City, yeah.
To
employees.
13, sorry, 13 and then 14 in the second year of the biennial.
Okay.
Right. Mr. Basil Dua.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I just want to kind of confirm that the $4 million that was for Fair Park when the private partnership happened, you kept $4 million in the parks budget specifically as like a discretionary?
Oh, no. No, it was to fund very specific things. So there were some additional items that the park department requested in last year's budget that the park board asked for that we were able to fund with that money. Of course, just the regular cost of living for park operations and capital improvements at Fair Park. So some of the things that we funded and in with the money for this year, for example, the zoo, the increase for the CPI, we have a partnership with the ISD and RISD on parks. That's what increased the number of people living within half a mile of a park. The WellMed Senior Center, the new staff member for the land dedication ordinance, parkland. Again, we mentioned the dynamic message board around Fair Park, but that's been changed in this budget. So those were some of the things that we used that money for.
So none of it was used to repair anything in Fair Park?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There was money put in for capital improvement funding in the current year, in the adopted budget, the year we're currently in. And then the management agreement requested or made available the opportunity for Fair Park First to come to the park department by the end of May of every year and request funding for its capital improvement plan. And so this year we had funding in the budget for that. In the following year, we would have their capital improvement plan and be able to put it into the city manager's request for particular capital improvements.
Do you have a current number of where we're sitting at with the deferred maintenance that's been identified with Fair Park?
I don't have a current number. What I can tell you is that, of course, there was $50 million in the bond program and that is quite a bit of money to put into facilities. And so we need to make sure that we execute those projects very well and then can look to further whittling away at that deferred maintenance. I have Willis Winters, director of the park department, in the back who can speak perhaps a little bit more to the current amount of deferred maintenance at Fair Park.
Council member, our deferred maintenance, based on the survey that was done and assessment prior to privatization by AECOM, was probably in the $200 to $240 million range.
Okay. Well, I'd love to see us be more aggressive on actually addressing what we have let get to that point. We have $250 million that's been identified of neglect over decades. This isn't just because this is the District 7. This is because this is the crown jewel of the city of Dallas, and we've let it crumble in front of our eyes. And then we have line items like $4 million in addition to bond money that's been allocated to improve what we've identified, and it's used for a bunch of other projects. It's really frustrating. It's kind of par for the course, and I think that we need to get a better handle on how we treat Fair Park.
Is there anyone else wishing to speak on for or against any of the amendments that were laid out by Councilman Kleiman? Hearing none, I'm going to restate the motion as it is right now, and I'll give you the option if you'd like to divide the question or you want to have them voted on as a package. But the motion as it stands right now is to adopt items 61, 62, 65, 66, 68, 72, 73, 74, 75, 76, 77, 79, 80, 81, 84, 87, 88, 89, 91. You withdrew 71. Is that correct? So that is the motion that's before us. Mr. Kleinman, do you want to move them all or do you want to divide the question?
Mr. Mayor, clearly I need a second on any component of these, and I'd prefer to just do them individually, but I guess to kind of back into it, if you would ask my colleagues, do any of them have a second on any of these motions? And then if not, I'll just stand down. Is that an option? Or otherwise, you can just take them individually.
It's already been moved and seconded to lay them out. Now,
so I'd like to vote them individually.
All right, so you want to move the question to them individually?
Yes.
That's not a problem. So is there a second to divide the question? Second to that? Anybody? Okay. To allow them to divide the question? All right. There's not a second to allow
I'll
you to divide the question.
I'll second for him to divide it.
Process this morning.
I'll second for him to divide it.
All right. All in favor? Any opposed? Yes.
I need clarification of the action we just took.
Well, we haven't taken it yet, and I want to clarify from the city attorney that the dividing the question is actually debatable or not. But all right, so all in favor of allowing him to divide the question, which means to take him up individually, which is what he wants to do, say aye.
Aye.
Those could we get a straw vote so we can get clarification? I would like to see the vote.
Sorry?
I'm trying to get an understanding of who's voting to support. I'm not going to support it, but I'm trying to see where those numbers
are
coming.
I think the city secretary is looking right now to see who's
supporting.
All
right,
so anyone in favor of allowing to divide the question?
Yeah.
Those opposed? So... All right, so the question is going to be divided, and we're going to take them up individually, but we'll do that pretty expeditiously, I think, because if there isn't a second, then there's no second. So on item 61, you need to move it.
Sorry, move to approve.
Is there a second? Fails for want of a second. Item 62.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second? Fails for want of a second. Item 65.
Motion to approve.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? No. All in favor indicate by showing a card. A green card if you're in favor. Not enough green cards. Item 66.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second? Fails for want of a second. 68.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second? Fails for want of a second. 72.
Motion to approve. Civil service reduction.
Fails for want of a second. 73.
Motion to approve.
Fails for want of a second. 74.
Motion to approve.
Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? If you're in favor, indicate by showing a green card.
I had a discussion.
I'm sorry, Mr. Basildua.
I didn't really catch this whenever you did the discussion on it overall. What exactly are you looking to cut?
Just to bring them to the current level and not have an increase of the $600,000.
So it's strictly the FTEs that are vacant currently?
I just look strictly at the increase over the current level.
Can I get clarification from Mr. Queso?
Yes, please.
On what?
So, Council, we're asking for an increase of $234,000. That's above what the current level is, and that includes $52,903 for health insurance, $13,000 for risk and CIS money that's sort of uncontrollable, and another those two are $66,000. The balance is a 0.7 FTE for $33,000. We had an attorney who was part-time and she left, and then we hired somebody full-time, so that increased the FTE for that person, came in lower than what she was making at the time, so we had a cost savings there. There's $15,000 for professional services, our community courts. The grant doesn't pay for certain things like treatment and security personnel. So $15,000 of that is to cover that cost. We have $30,000 for the youth program. If you remember, I told the council about the youth commission. We had $30,000 to provide for youth groups where they can use that money, apply basically for grants through the youth commission, and they can use that money to kind of help clean up their neighborhoods. And they would get some money and hopefully spread the word to, you know, improve their neighborhood. So that's $30,000 in that. We have another $15,000 to increase professional development so we get more training for our lawyers and our staff. $7,000 was for our vehicle use. We didn't budget for mileage, and that captures that amount. And then $67,000 is our AdvoLogic sales force, which is the change in our program to track and monitor our work in the office. Because we have this antiquated system. So out of that, that's $234,000 basically of additional money that we're asking for.
Currently, you have 158 proposed FTEs for this next fiscal year budget, correct?
Right.
How many FTEs are currently in the city attorney's office?
We have several vacancies at the moment. And so, obviously, the city attorney, which is almost 300,000, that's vacant. That spot has been vacant. We have a temporary assistant, an office assistant we're looking to, that's our receptionist, we're looking to hire that person. We have an office assistance position that we use for a variety of things. We used it during a legislative session to hire an attorney to help review the thousands of bills through the process. We've also used that for a paralegal position. We have a municipal court prosecutor that is still unfilled. During last year, we had a turnover of about 13 of our 17 prosecutors. These are entry-level jobs, and there was quite a bit of turnover. So during that whole year, we had 13 vacancies, but now we have the one vacancy. We have a community court prosecutor that we were trying to fill that spot. We have several of them left for higher-paying jobs. We have a senior litigator position that we're hoping to use for our community prosecution section to help with filing different types of lawsuits. We've been having difficulty filling that spot because of the economy being well. And then there's one, a DFW attorney, that's still vacant, and that's a pass-through. So DFW reimburses the city for the three DFW lawyers that are in the city attorney's office that are assigned out there. So that's
okay. With that one specifically, with us being reimbursed for that position, why is it necessary to be a line item? When it's reimbursed, what happens to that fund?
I'll have to refer to Elizabeth to
and what,
to
what's talk the cost on that particular line item?
I'm going to refer to Monica Salazar, our budget person, to give you the exact number.
So Mr. Caput was the person in that position. He was making 147 at the time, and then we also do, you know, taxes and pension and benefits and things of that nature, and we bill DFW for the exact cost that person's in the position, and then they send that money and it goes into the general fund revenue.
Okay. So I have 30 seconds left on round one, but this is really intriguing to me. I don't know if 600,000 is necessarily the number that we meet to, but the numbers have not matched up. You're coming in 407,000 under budget with the city attorney's office this current fiscal year, or that's what you're forecasted to, correct?
We're coming in higher than that. We're coming under budget for higher than that amount.
And I understand that y'all have sources of revenue as well, but from where I see the productivity and where we are coming in under budget, it's really hard for me to wrap my head around filling some of these positions that have been vacant for some 4 to 6 months from the research that I did. So I'm curious. And then with a position that we're being reimbursed for specifically, I don't know that it's necessary for us to approve for this next fiscal year and us figure out how we go forward with that. So I don't know if 600,000 is the number, but I am very curious about what we can do to shave a little bit with the city attorney's office.
Thank you. So, members, here's what we're doing. We already had discussion on these items, but since some of you have your lights on, I did 2 minutes for your previous, so I'm going to let you have a minute if you still have a question about one of these individual ones as we're taking them up. So you get a minute if you need it. But with that, if anyone still needs to ask questions, Mr. Kleinman?
Yeah, thank you. I am also confused about the budget, because the reason I came to that number was I looked at the current forecast and the budget, and it was about $600,000 difference. So if it's really only 200, I'm not getting the math why it's only really 200 increase, but I'd certainly be willing to adjust my amendment to just say, let's just keep the budget the same it was last year by the 200. What did you say the increase?
It was the additional amount is $234,000,
or just rounded at $200,000.
The adopted budget for FY19 was $18,348,876.
But we got all the work done without spending all that money. So anyway, so I guess I would – I'm not sure who seconded me on this one, but – if I took it to $200,000, would that just be more palatable to everybody on the council? I'd be willing to make that adjustment if it's okay with my seconder.
I think the city manager needs to say something here.
Just real quickly, obviously, Chris started out with an explanation of what the increase was. He actually went into things that weren't directly related to the increase but were offsets. But I think there was normal cost of living related adjustments that I think need to at least be factored into the $230,000 increase. But again, I think the big difference is I think the prior city attorney's salary was held vacant for the entirety of this current fiscal year. And so I think that's the bulk of that $500,000 or so in savings. But I think Chris may want to speak to the specifics of the increase or budget, may be able to help him on the things that he had absolutely no control over that went up, that caused the escalation from the current budget, not the projected, but the actual budget, the budget to where we are today. So thank you. I just wanted to clarify that would then result in a reduction of positions potentially if, in fact, those things weren't factored in.
Mr. Atkins. I'm sorry. Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you. So I was actually going to make a motion to amend this from $600,000 to $100,000, to make the reduction $100,000 instead of $600,000.
Well, at this point, it needs to be, it's a straight-up amendment to your amendment. So you moved it. Any second?
Second.
All right. Discussion on that amendment to modify this dollar amount from 600 to 100.
Can I offer a friendly amendment to Officer Narvaez to make it to 147 to match the FTE salary for the DFW that will be reimbursed?
Do you accept that?
That's fine.
Okay, so
I want to make sure I understand what
Hold on 1 second. So
the technical piece that y'all are forgetting. That's
okay.
What I'm asking.
Hold on 1 second. Do you want to say something?
Let me clarify.
Yeah, please.
And then we'll explain to you what's happening.
But in order for us to write a check and spend dollars on people or things, we have to have the appropriation authority.
Right.
And even if the money is reimbursed, it nets out to zero, but we have to have the authorization to expend the money.
But isn't that the purpose of the contingency fund, so that we have something to spend?
No.
No. No. It's not.
No.
It's not. So that is a...
The $147 is going to be spent in the city attorney's office, that it's going to be reimbursed to us, it's going to be put back into the general fund to be spent as you see fit.
No.
No.
It's going to reimburse for the salary we just paid to the person.
It's entirely funded by a reimbursement, but we have to have the appropriation or we're not allowed to write a paycheck.
Right.
You don't have to...
It's an accounting item.
Yeah, it's an accounting.
Right.
Whenever it's a net zero.
So do you accept that friendly amendment? No. Okay. So the amendment that's been moved and seconded at this point is to change the dollar amount from $600,000 to $100,000. We're having discussion on that amendment to this amendment at this point. Mr. Atkins, do you want to speak on that?
Yes, Ms. Rachel. I think when we first look at the number in our big book, the $600,000, I believe that it was a number that we did not have number one, we need to hire a new city attorney. We do not know how much money is going to be.
Right.
We got to go outside and hire an attorney. And when you throw a cut in the attorney's budget, you know, we're talking about $234,000. I just can't support that. I mean, we are shorthanded right now.
Mr. Narvaez, your light's still on. Did you want? Okay. Ms. Arnold.
Thank you very much. Let me, colleagues, as you talked earlier, we do need to get more educated on this topic, but let me just tell you where we need the attorneys. We need to turn up the heat in terms of our slumlords who are plaguing our communities, especially, we'll say, I'll speak to District 4. We have some slumlords who have been perpetuating crimes for over 20 years, and we're still trying to take them on out. We need to tighten up on the slumlords. We need to tighten up on, we have environmental issues in the southern sector that have to be addressed. We have equity that we need environmentally and socially. We're asking for environmental justice and social justice. We need the attorneys to handle up on the business and represent our communities who are being pimped by these convenience stores, these smoke shops, these prostitution rings, and all the other illnesses that you don't want in your district, especially when you're trying to get economic development. So please do not shortchange the opportunity that we have in the southern sector to push up and change the environment for our constituents. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. Mr. Basil Dua, did you?
I just want to clarify, since a lot of opinions are being thrown out, that's actually why I got clarification from the city attorney's office on what this budget line was. None of that was just discussed was involved in this amendment. So thank
okay.
you.
All right. So any more discussion on the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, please indicate your support for the amendment to the amendment to change from 600 to 100,000. We count the green cards, please. It fails. So we're on the amendment as originally submitted, 600,000. Aim for the okay, but hold your cards back up and let the city secretary can see them, please. It actually passes. So the amendment to the amendment, we're now on the amendment as amended, which is now 100,000. Any further discussion on Mr. Kleiman's amendment, which now is a $100,000 reduction to the city attorney's office? Seeing none, please indicate your support for the amendment as amended by showing a green card. There's eight. The amendment passes. Amendment 74 as amended passes. Mr. Kleiman, Amendment 75. Is there a second? It fails for want of a second. 76.
Motion to approve.
It's been seconded. Is there a discussion? Ms. Blackman.
Yes, on this one, has anybody reached out to the district to see if they'd be willing to share this cost? I mean, we had clarification that this is a state, is it a state law that
it's
we
a state law.
We asked for cost sharing in this. I know we're getting county money at 2.1, right? Is it a fee?
2.644. There are two different child safety fees. One, the most obvious is on the car registrations, $1.50 on every car registration in the county.
But any discussions with the district has not happened?
We have quarterly meetings with the district, and I have certainly jokingly asked them to pay for this, and they have pointed out to me that it is state law.
Okay.
So, no, I've not had serious discussions on it because it is statute.
Okay. And so if we as the elected a body could talk to their fellow colleagues at the district to see if there is maybe a $1 million that they could pay for a little bit.
We can certainly engage in the conversation.
Okay. Mr. Councilman Kleiman, have you had any conversations with any board members on this?
I mean, you know, generally the answer is like no, but the issue is it's in statute that we provide the service, but the statute doesn't say the service level. And so what I'm saying is we'll provide the service level at the level we're funded. Okay, so otherwise it's just a blank check for all these school districts to spend our money on crossing guards. So I believe we should fund it. If it's statutory, we should fund it at the statutory level that we're getting funding. And if they want more than that, they should. Okay.
Mr. Kleiman, do you have anything of Ms. Mendelson?
I would just say I think it's a great conversation to have for the next fiscal year, but I think child safety has got to be our first concern, and I couldn't support anything that would put kids at risk.
Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I get the point, and we do need some help in getting this paid for. And I think it's a conversation we may want to start having, but we can't just pull the plug at this point because our school districts wouldn't be prepared to take care of whatever extra business they'd have to take care of. But I do see the point in the future. So we've got to figure out how to, before we take away a program, we've got to figure out how to have the replacement before we take away. So I'm going to be voting no on this one because, again, I agree with my colleague, Ms. Mendelson, that children's safety is of the utmost importance. So we have to continue this until we figure out a different way to add in the funding. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Blackman.
And I too agree, but I do think that we should ask our partner at the school districts if they would be willing to help fund this because safety is important, especially for, you know, for children and all. So I would be willing to start that conversation. People are texting me as, hey, we will talk to you. So I would love to have that conversation with the school district when the time is
awesome. Right. Mr. Blewett.
I would second where this conversation, or triple where this conversation is going, because I disagree with how this is being funded and the shortfall, but I don't think it's the right time to just cut it off cold. So I want to be involved in this conversation as it goes forward.
All right. All in favor of Amendment 76, indicate by showing a green card. Not enough cards. Number 77.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second? Fails for want of a second. Number 79.
A motion to approve.
Is there a second? Fails for want of a second. Number 80.
Motion to approve.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion. Mr. Kleinman.
I don't think we should be in the business of corporate welfare for one of the largest industries, multi-billion dollar industry.
All in favor, please indicate by Mr. Basil Dua.
I agree, and I do think that this is somewhere that Visit Dallas could chip in, but it's kind of along the same lines of what we've had in the past. I can't support it without us having verification that we can get it back and it be paid for by another source, which is what it was originally in the amendment. It was for the expense to be taken over by Visit Dallas, and that wasn't something that we can get done without having that confirmation. So I won't support that right now.
Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. I heard this discussion earlier, Mr. Rodnicks. You were giving us some insight into this, but I didn't hear the outcome. Have we had the follow-up discussion with Visit Dallas? Do we know where this option is?
Councilman, there has been some communication with Visit Dallas. I think they are willing to consider taking on this function and responsibility. I think they indicated that it would be left to us if, in fact, we wanted to transition it. I think my communication with them was, for me, it wasn't technically a budget amendment item, but something that we will be discussing with them very shortly in our relook at how we approach their agreement. And so I think that would be the appropriate time, in my opinion. And I've shared with the councilman that, again, the delta on expense, if it's not about just the fact that we shouldn't be doing it, from a savings perspective, is around $50,000, not $321,000, because we receive $170,000 in revenue from outside the general fund. And then there are some built-in costs that this program actually shares and defrays from the general fund that will continue regardless of whether or not we transition the program as it related to allocated costs for some of the director and assistant director and other staff members who work on making sure that the program is stood up. Those would reside and actually stay in EcoDev and would not go with the program.
Okay, and you said the outside revenue, additional outside revenue based on this comes from where?
$100,000 from Visit Dallas as well as $70,000 from the Convention and Services Department.
So I guess if I'm hearing you right, that if we were to support this, we would. The number is not really 321; it's 50.
It's 50, and so again, that's why I think
that's right. 50 is the amount the general fund contributes towards this program. The rest of it is reimbursements, et cetera.
Okay, and then those reimbursements either would no longer come to us or they
right.
would stay in the outside budget where
in the convention center from. Or in Visit Dallas.
Okay. I guess if they're willing to do it and we know they're willing to do it and we're in this place, I think I'm leaning towards supporting this. Can someone tell me why I shouldn't?
Well, one, because the deal isn't a deal until it's approved and amended. And so I think, again, I think that's the appropriate course to do it, and then that funding would fall to fund balance and or be utilized in the Economic Development Department for anything that the council might desire. I would argue it may even assist as you bring forward the economic development strategy. It could be some component of that that $50,000 might be able to fund.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rodnick. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Blackman.
So looking at the timelines, we're going to be talking about the Visit Dallas contract in October, and that would be the appropriate time to have that discussion, or do we carry it through and then amend it again, amend this budget again if it does come through that Visit Dallas says we'll absorb this? And it's not necessarily just for the $50,000. It's also looking at, is this the best place for this office to be held in economic development? Should it be in the DC, in the visitor and bureau, in the marketing arm of the city? Well, the Visit Dallas is our marketing.
Is that a question for the city manager, or is that just
yes? Yes. Okay. Just process timing.
So I'll defer to Joey Zapata on the specific timing of the agreement coming back.
Councilwoman, we have been working on the restated and amended contract with Visit Dallas, and we are prepared to bring that back to City Council in October. And we're listening to what the council is saying about this, and that would be our opportunity to go and resolve that so that we can bring that option to the council in October.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure. That's fine. Thank you.
Ms. Gates.
So I'm assuming this funding is compliant with HOT if Visit Dallas has been contributing.
Yes,
it is. So could we not just put it all in the convention center enterprise, this burden of the $50,000, and have it funded with other?
So
if it's only $50,000, that way it would kind of clean it up and get it out of general fund and all into convention center, and then at that point it could be absorbed either by Visit Dallas, because Visit Dallas is part of the convention center money.
Good idea.
I'm just asking.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think through the question and the budget gymnastics that we're doing on this one. So the $50,000 is the net savings. And so the other funding portion that we'll actually have to retain, I think it's about $170,000, is generally funded. So that will continue to have to be the general fund, and the convention center can't pay for that. The $50,000 is just a result of, we just won't have to expend the general fund dollars anymore. So to transition at the convention center and for it to be absorbed by hot tax is really, I don't think, a necessity or a relevant transaction, but I'll defer to my budget people. But that's just the delta between what we currently spend.
Right, but we're spending it out of general fund now.
Correct. But
so if we moved both the expense and the revenue into the convention center budget, then they would absorb that difference of 50 that we're currently absorbing.
And I'll defer to staff, but I don't believe what's in that $171,000, which is a portion of the economic development director and the assistant director and some other non-direct programmatic film industry things. That is the remaining piece that would just stay with us, because, again, it is deferring some costs, because Courtney and Robin have to oversee the management of the employees and the general government.
Because it's ECO Dev.
Because it's ECO
Dev. Right. Right. They're distributing all of their departmental administration costs across the various services, and so they have distributed part of administration to the Creative Industries program. But when you actually look at the cost of the program, direct cost of the program and the revenue from that, that's where the general fund is only putting in $50,000 to the actual cost of the program. So if we were to move the revenue and the expense for the program itself to the convention center, the convention center would need to determine how to fund an additional $50,000, so they would cut something else in their budget, and we would leave $171,000 in the ECO budget, which would go towards departmental administration and just be spread across the services that remain.
So could I have, I think Rose is here from convention center. I mean, is that...
Councilman, would you restate the question, though, so just so that I'm clear and I understand? If the intent is that we... If the intent is that we're going to... The funding already is largely in the convention center and coming into the through the convention center through HOT revenues, and then we pay it to Visit Dallas's part. Visit Dallas pays it back to us. It's HOT money. It's already largely there. So I think if I understand your question, the way I'm hearing it is whether the convention center should do the work or whether Visit Dallas should do the work, and that's what I'm saying. We can go to the table with Visit Dallas and work it out into the contract. And how it's funded, what the full cost of it is. So one way that it might work is we keep our $70,000 and spend it on convention center things, maintenance, et cetera, and the $100,000 that Visit Dallas is currently contributing from our HOT revenues, they would blend into it and take on any other additional costs. But all of this is kind of the reason why this conversation is the reason why we want to have this conversation with Visit Dallas and bring the option back to City Council.
Right. Yeah, I was just, if we're going to move it to Visit Dallas, I was thinking, I mean, that goes to the convention center anyway. So moving all these monies to and from, could Rosa not reimburse the eco people that are doing the work out of her budget with the revenue that she has?
Yeah, she's already providing a reimbursement to eco. So if we're going to keep the eco staff member and others doing this, we could increase the reimbursement from the convention center. It would be one way to reduce general fund spending on the program.
Mr. Kleinman?
That's a question for Rosa. Then, do you have the $50,000 to in addition?
I could make the $50,000 available, but that would be contingent on, I guess, economic development maintaining the program or how we work it out with Visit Dallas, whether our department takes it over or Visit Dallas continues it. But if economic development is not doing the task, then I can't use HOT funds for that because right. It would have to fall under Tax Code 351, which outlines how the HOT funds could be allocated.
Mr. Kleinman, the latest time's expired.
Okay,
Mr. Kleinman.
So just briefly, like to express frustration that all these conversations we need to have were not had prior to us working on this budget. This is the same deal we had with the school guard crossing. We're going to have a conversation. You've had my amendments for 2 weeks. So with that being said, I think that if we can get this $50,000 out of the general fund, and then if there is a conversation that is somehow resolved with Visit Dallas, we can come back and make the changes, but we could take it out of the general fund now and push it over to convention.
Ms. Arnold?
Thank you. Just for the purpose, and I won't support this, but could you, just for the benefit of the audience, explain what HOT money is? I want them to understand we are legitimate in our discussion. It's just not hot. What does HOT mean? So they're in the audience going, what's going on? So
the hotel occupancy tax is a tax on hotel rooms, including short-term rentals, and that the hotel operator remits to the city and to the state. The city portion is 7%, and then it is revenue to the convention center, which then it's divided up into several purposes. Part of it's to pay back debt for the convention center capital projects, and a part of it is attributed to Visit Dallas and a part to cultural arts. There are a few other uses that are allowed by state law for hotel occupancy tax revenue, but state law is fairly restrictive and has particular uses that are allowed. So we cannot use the money for just anything, but there are a few things that we can use it for. This is one of them.
All right, thank you. And so for folks who stay in hotels, that's where we're getting the money from. But from the cultural arts piece, we're continuing to fight in the southern sector, I'll say District 4 in particular, for cultural inclusion, cultural justice. And so we don't want to create instability, if you will, in the fund without having the conversation. And I've heard Mr. Kleinman said that you all have had the benefit of the conversation, but I haven't had the benefit of the conversation with those representatives. So I cannot support any cuts at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. Is there anyone else wishing to speak on for or against Mr. Kleinman's amendment? Seeing none, please indicate your support for Amendment 80 by a green card. None. Number 81.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second? All right, it's been moved and second discussion. Mr. Kleinman, then Mr. West.
Just briefly, I felt like this, the $7 million savings from the Fair Park contract should have gone back to the general fund and not just be held in parks. And even to Mr. Basildula's comment, why didn't even this $4 million go back into Fair Park for some of the maintenance issues we needed there?
Mr. West, do you have anything? All right. Please indicate your support for Amendment 81 by showing a green card. Not enough. Number 84.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second? Fails for want of a second. Number 87.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second? Fails for want of a second. Number 88.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. Discussion. Mr. Kleinman.
I just believe this is the responsibility of the county, and I would like to see this taken over somewhere else and just not one of our core services in the city.
Ms. Mendelson?
Completely agree that this is the role of the county, but like the crossing guard, I think that we need to have that conversation so that they will include it in their budget, and I will volunteer to help advocate for that. I've already talked with some of the county commissioners.
Thank Mr. Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Nadia, could you come up and kind of talk about the process of how we got down to $140,000 and why we're still at $140,000. This has been briefed, discussed, voted on by
the
human.
We're on number 87. This is the unit.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about that as well. It came to human and social needs as well.
88.
So, so let's talk about that. And as you see, I will be speaking on 89.
Okay. Anyone else?
Yeah. No, I asked for Nadia to come and give the history on, because this came through the Human and Social Needs Committee as well.
And so just for clarification, Councilmember Thomas, you're talking about Amendment 88.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Sorry, that was my mistake.
But come back for 89. I want to talk about 88, but stay ready.
Okay. So the dental care program, this is a partnership with Texas A&M Dental School to provide routine cleanings, denture repair, and other related services for our seniors. I do believe we serve close to about 2,000 or so seniors each year in this contract. It's fully supported by our Senior Affairs Commission, as well as those who, of course, receive those services. And so I do believe that we did reduce this amount by a certain percentage, I think about maybe $10,000 or so dollars, just to kind of maintain where we are. And so elimination of this program will prevent us to provide those services at last resort, actually, Councilmember Thomas, to those 2,000 or so seniors.
Last comment. We did receive a list from the Senior Affairs Commission of their priorities, and this was on that list. Thank you.
Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will not be in support of this simply because we do not have a program to take over this program at this time, and we don't have any funding for it. So our seniors work very, very hard in Senior Affairs Commission to get these funds to where they were at. There was a time when these were funded by CDBG funds, which was great, and it went down to, I believe, when I was serving on the Community Development Commission with Mr. Thomas, that at one point we were reduced down to like $50,000. It was some ridiculous number that we couldn't even help, you know, hardly anyone, and now we're up to being able to help 2,000 seniors, and I could not in any way entertain even reducing this a little bit until we get a program in place. If the county wants to help out and match or take it over and pay for it, yay. And then we can take these funds to do another program that actually helps our seniors that are on that priority list. Our senior affairs commissioners do a fantastic job and work really hard to let us know what they need. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Atkins.
I agree with Ms. Novaz. Number one, that look like every budget cycle come up, we always talk about the seniors, you know, especially with dental care. And my senior person know, the older you get, the more you got to take care of your teeth. And Mr. Kleinman, colleague, we've been through this for the last 8 years.
Is that all? Is that it? just want to make sure. Okay. All right. Ms. Clay, you've already spoken for a minute on this. Did you need...
Staff question.
Oh, okay, sure.
When did this originally start showing up in the city's budget? What budget year?
I don't believe we have the exact year that it showed up, Councilman. I know it was prior to this administration's arrival, but we can get that actual origination year for you.
Okay. Please indicate your support for this amendment with a green card. Not enough cards. Number 89.
Motion approved.
Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. Discussion. Mr. Kleinman.
The senior minister of transportation.
Mr. Kleinman.
Yes. Again, we've talked about this almost every single budget year, which is it's just not our responsibility. It's DART's responsibility. I do know we managed to push a lot of the senior transportation to DART. I just don't understand why we just still are hanging on to a portion of that. And we have had those discussions with DART, so that they need to provide this transportation, not us.
Mr. Thomas?
Ditto. Nadia, could you give a history on this and how we got to the point where we're only down to $140,000 and why we're still at $140,000?
Thank you for that question, Councilmember Thomas. This staff has been working with DART, Councilmember Kleinman, to narrow down the number of individuals that have been taking partaking in the services offered by the city. This is another program of last resort. When we first looked at the original list of clients, we had a little bit more over 1,800 or so that were partaking in the city's program as opposed to DART's program. In our conversations with DART, we were able to narrow that list down to under 200 participants who are still in our program. And this $140,000 is actually serving as a grant match to funding that we have received from the North Texas COG to help offset, provide referral services to those clients and work with them so that they do become eligible for either a program through DART or through one of their partners. So this is an actual program of last resort. We've been able to dwindle that number down, get those clients to the services that they actually need, and this will allow us to continue that work and get those clients to the appropriate transportation service. This is for medical and medical-related services that they need to get to across the city.
Anything else, Mr. Thomas? Of course. Mr. Narvaez. I'm sorry, Ms. Mendelson, then Mr. Narvaez.
So I think this is another example where we need to have a conversation over the course of the year. I would never want seniors to be without dental care or without transportation. But for $325 million that DART gets in our tax dollars, they should be providing actual transportation for our seniors, even the 200. And I applaud staff for getting that number down. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Yep. They need to go all the way. And so over the course of this year, I think we need to have that conversation so that next year we don't have this item. But, of course, we should not leave our people out this year. But we really have to have this on our to-do list. Thank you.
Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just going to make sure that, one, to applaud staff last term under through Mr. Thomas's leadership in human and social needs, and as well as Ms. Grayson's leadership of quality of life. This was a question that was brought up. Why was it costing so much? And to get down from 2,000 senior citizens down to 200, I have to applaud staff that you followed direction and you worked very well and diligently and really hard. But again, colleagues, these are the folks that are at the last resort. These are folks who do not qualify for DART, do not qualify for a program, and they need to get to their medical needs taken care of. So this isn't like some taxi service. This is literally life or death for these seniors to make sure they get to where they need to get. So I want to thank staff for that. And if we find a program that can take this over, you know, next year or the next budget or what have you, fantastic. And then let's take this $140,000 and hit that list that the senior affairs commissioners have given us and not eliminate. Let's continue to help our senior citizens with the issues that they are facing. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Arnold.
Thank you so much. Since this is a discussion on DART, number one, we definitely need to have a conversation, a serious conversation with DART. But two, I believe we have, what is it, 1 cent of our sales tax goes to DART. Am I correct?
Yes.
All right. So we need to work with this knowledge. Number one, these are taxpayers. In District 4, we have seniors who need to get to their medical appointments. They have other places they need to go. And so just by the nature of them being a taxpayer, sales tax 1% goes to DART. We need to have a more serious conversation with DART. We can't get economic development, so the folks have to get on the bus to go to a doctor. They won't come to the southern sector. We can't get grocery stores. You have to get on a bus to go to the grocery store. So we need transportation. We owe it to the taxpayers. And I'm going to speak very strongly about District 4. We need to take care of our seniors. Now, if we can build all these amenities that in the city, surely we can take care of the people upon whose backs we've taken the money, the property taxes, and helped to build this city. So I'm going to calm down a little bit, but I'm just insulted that we would even talk about short-circuiting seniors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. I understand. Mr. Clement, did you have anything?
I had a question for staff.
Okay.
Can you tell me the difference between DART's criteria and our criteria, and what's creating this gap?
DART's process is quite rigorous in comparison to the cities in terms of their needing to require some type of doctor's release, an annual physical with follow-up medical appointments. We do not require that. In addition to that, there is a slight charge that comes at a reduced rate for those clients who do participate in DART's program. We look at that income and we waive that fee in totality. In most cases, for those who cannot afford either the $1 or $1.50 fare that even comes with still participating in DART's program. So with these remaining clients that we're working with, we're providing them that support to get to their doctor so that they can get their annual physical, so they can get the doctor release forms, and then working with them to see how we can offset the remaining cost that is required to participate in DART's program.
You told me what DART's criteria is, but we don't have criteria, is what you're saying. If they just call us up and they get a ride.
Not necessarily, Councilman. We do lean on what they have provided to DART. We do look at their income. We have case workers that are within the Office of Senior Affairs who do work with those individual clients to determine whether or not they are eligible for our program.
Just a caseworker's discretion. We don't have criteria. Just a caseworker's discretion.
We need to move to the vote now.
Okay.
You've exercised all of your time here. So, if there's no one else wishing to speak on for or against this amendment, please indicate your support for it for number 89 with a green card. Green card. There are not enough cards. Number 91, is there a motion?
91 All right. was withdrawn.
Sorry. Motion approved.
You barely got it in. Is there a second? It fails for want of a second. All right. Are 92 and 93 moot?
92 was withdrawn with the friendly amendment on the city manager's amendment. 93 has not been considered.
Okay.
That is from Mr. Magoo.
It's been withdrawn.
It's been withdrawn. Okay.
All right.
That concludes everything that we received by Friday morning.
Okay. Well, with that, it's 11:35 a.m. on September 4th, 2019. City Council briefing meeting will now go into closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda. Number one, City of El Cenizo et al. Versus State of Texas et al. Number two, City of Dallas versus Delta Airlines Incorporated et al. And number three, City of Dallas versus Blue Star Recycling LLC et al. And I need to state for the record that I will be recusing myself from the discussion on item number two for a conflict. And we will reconvene here at 1:15. get on air. All right. City Council briefing meeting has completed its closed session under Section 551.071, and at 1:24 p.m. on September 4th, 2019, we've now returned to open session. Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We'll now take up Agenda Item 4. Agenda Item 4 is first reading of the appropriation ordinances for the proposed FY 2019-20 City of Dallas Operating, Capital, and Grant and Trust Budgets. We do have five individuals who have signed up to speak on this item. I'll call those speakers first. Alan Tallis, not present. David King, not present. Brenda Snitzer, you'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
I'm Brenda Snitzer, the Executive Director of the Stew Pot, located at 1835 Young Street, Dallas 75201.
On behalf of the homeless service providers that were all here earlier, I want to thank you for continued funding for the homeless services. The Stew Pot is a ministry of First Presbyterian Church and has been a provider of homeless services for 45 years. With a commitment to partnering with the city and other providers of services, we desire to eliminate homelessness in Dallas. The Stew Pot has always sought to provide solutions and fill gaps, such as our well-known identification services and other comprehensive programs, providing meal services at the bridge, and most recently, our early morning initiative with Downtown Dallas, Inc., where we open at 6 a.m. so folks can get off the streets in the early hours when residences and businesses are getting started on their day. Mayor Johnson, we thank you and the City Council for your commitment to the citizens of Dallas, including those who are in shelters and on the streets. These folks have a variety of issues when they face homelessness. It is only through a partnership of providers that a continuum of care can be successful in helping first-time as well as the chronic homeless to become housed again. A review of best practices from around the country show only public-private partnerships and funding enable others to be successful, enable cities to be successful in overcoming homelessness. The 2020 funds from the City of Dallas budget are critical in matching the commitment that the private investment the rest of the collective organizations provide. The Stew Pot of First Presbyterian Church does not receive government funds. However, we are part of the collaborative system that is dependent on the city's funds in solving the issue of homelessness. The $12 million investment from the City of Dallas is vital in matching more than $20 million in funds from the Stew Pot, Austin Street, Catholic Charities, City Square, DDI, Family Gateway, MDHA, Our Calling, Salvation Army, and The Bridge. These partners, many that were here earlier, and others, including Parkland and MetroCare, regularly work together to combat homelessness, along with the city departments of the Dallas Police Department, Code Enforcement, the Office of Homeless Solutions, and the Dallas Library, as well as the Citizens Homeless Commission. By collaborating, we increasingly are able to leverage both city and private funding. If you ask any partner, only in recent years has this group been working well together to develop a system to end homelessness, and now is the time to solve this issue in Dallas. The dollars that you have committed are critical to funding projects such as the Transportation Network, Affordable Housing Solutions, and Inclement Weather Emergency Responses. With the partnership of the city and the city's funds, without those funds, we would have a gap in the continuum of care as well as the solution-based approach to ending homelessness. Thank you for continuing to prioritize the funds and homeless solutions. Your support is critical in allowing us to garner private dollars to fill the gaps. Thank you so much for your support, and we really appreciate your continued help with homelessness. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ken Webb.
Well, Mayor and members of council, my name is Ken Webb, and please let me know if I need to lean in a little closer to the mic. I've had this issue before, but my address is 8275 Walnut Hill Lane. I'm the chair of the Citizen Homelessness Commission, and I would like to make a few comments on the economics of homelessness. Studies have shown that the cost of housing a homeless person and providing necessary wraparound services for a year can be less than the amount the city spends on average to provide first responder and other public services to one chronically homeless person. Now, whether the cost saved would necessarily be a complete offset in the current Dallas economy, of course, is not guaranteed by studies performed by other cities, but the point remains that making an investment in providing housing and services for our citizens living with homelessness will provide a real economic benefit to the city by substantially reducing those other costs. Now, my colleague on the commission, Alan Tallis, had signed up to speak today. He wasn't able to stay for the afternoon session, but he asked me to say that he spent 40 years in the hotel and convention industry, and he is certain that revenue generated by that industry for the city would suffer significantly if the homelessness is not, if it's allowed to get out of control. So not providing adequate funding for the Office of Homeless Solutions would be short-sighted, looking at it strictly from an economic perspective. I also believe it would be wrong on principle. Having even one person living and sometimes dying on our streets is a tragedy. We have 10,000. The Office of Homeless Solutions operates with far fewer resources than it needs. Its community partners, many of whom are here this morning, don't have the responsibility to make up the deficit, nor do they have the resources to do so. Ultimately, it's the city's responsibility. Providing a baseline level of assistance to its citizens in greatest need is a moral imperative for the city. The 15 of you are the ones that have the power to provide funding necessary to make a real, sustainable difference in the fight to end and prevent homelessness in Dallas. I would like to have seen a much greater allocation of funds to address homelessness in this budget. But at a minimum, I respectfully request that you reject any amendments that would decrease funding for the Office of Homeless Solutions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Marco Villegas.
I think we're all a little bit out of place. We kind of intended to talk at the earlier session, but we kind of moved to here. But I think that the points are still relevant. I think that the police department is a very relevant and important member of our working class, right? But they're a member of our working class. So I think part of the attrition for why they're leaving our city is partly their pay, but it's also 40%, the 40% side of the pie chart, right? They're affected by the income disparity. They're affected by the lack of affordable housing. They're affected by senior care. So just being part of that exercise earlier, going line by line in terms of some of those social services that were being considered being cut, I think we should encompass the innovation that we're rewarding Uber and Kroger, right? We're rewarding them with tax abatements because they're innovative. But I think we could bring some of that innovation right into this room and think about public safety holistically, right? Not just thinking of like, hey, we have this 60% of the pie that can't be cut, and the rest of you need to fight for the 40, because that's just the way it is, right? I think if we can take a more holistic approach and kind of talk a little more and interact with one another, we can think about more creative things that have actual solutions getting to the root cause of the issues, right? So just high level, just as a kid, having access to a rec center just gave me time to space to kind of be creative and meet people that kind of set me on a good path. As I think of the privilege that my daughter has, I think about what class I'm going to take her. My wife and I are debating whether it's gymnastics or kung fu, and that's a privilege that we have but should be broadened out to the greater community, not just my daughter. Thinking about libraries, you go to the library right across the street. It's not just a place where you read books. It's a place where people go for comfort and refuge, right? When you think about sort of what's going on now in terms of the public climate, the welcoming communities office is of increased importance. So just some ideas, and I guess my only point is just to challenge you all to kind of be innovative, be that innovation that you all reward, and rethink that pie chart and say, hey, can it be reversed, right? And maybe there's being proactive can make us less reactionary in terms of how we approach public safety.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, this concludes your speakers on this item.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 4 has been read into the record. Is there a motion? Ms. Gates?
I move to approve agenda item number 4, passage of the first
reading of the fiscal year 2019-20 appropriation ordinance, which reflects the city's manager's recommended budget as presented to the City Council on August 13th, as amended by City Council through straw votes taken earlier today.
Is there a second?
You all have a copy.
Any discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? The motion carries.
Mr. Mayor, this concludes your agenda for this meeting.
Thank you very much.
We'll now go back to your open microphone speakers.
Sure.
We have a few. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council, shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Johnson only. Also, if you have any handouts, you can go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, Fadaya Rashik.
My name is Fadaya Rashik, and I live in Irving.
Do you mind speaking into the microphone?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm short. So today I'm here because I want to talk about what happened last week. And I want to talk, before I speak what happened to Mr. Marvin, I want to talk a little bit about BDS, or boycott. BDS is a nonviolence movement, peaceful movement that oppose all form of racism, discrimination, or bigotry. And this is an international movement. And as American citizen, we have a history of boycott from Martin Luther King, the Birmingham boycott bus, and other boycott. So the BDS is to raise public awareness about the injustice happening to the Palestinian. Now, you're going to tell me what we have to do with that. Why are we raising this in here, the boycott? Because we have, in 2017, the Harvard hurricane happened in Houston. Have you guys heard of it? I'm sure all of you heard of it. Some of the people over there, the Texas, refused to give them financial aid if they did not sign that they will not boycott Israel. We have another case in Austin where the teacher, she teach disabled kids for 9 years in a public school, where she refused to sign the part that I will not boycott Israel. She lost her job, and she have to sue the school or the city. So I'm saying that it's affecting us as American citizens to practice our First Amendment that protects our rights to boycott any country, any foreign country, include Israel. So when we criticize Israeli racist policy, this is not anti-Semitic. We need to distinguish between both. And BDS is just to put pressure and hold Israel accountable for oppressing innocent people. And we should not be, as an American citizen, part of this. I can't hear you, Mr. Lee, sorry.
Okay.
So for me, the way that Mr. Marvin was behaved, like what Mr. Councilman, that he give his back to Mr. Marvin, a long activist, a veteran, what affect him, it affect us. You know, I don't accept even my own kids, if he disagree with me, not to turn his back on me. So I feel this is not acceptable behavior. And I want to understand more about what's a hate speech. Because there is a few in here. I saw one post on Facebook. She said this is, she accusing Mr. Marvin, it's anti-Semitic. And then we heard another one saying this is a hate speech. So we would like to clarify that, please, for us.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Leon Holman.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the council. And first, I'd like to say congratulations to the mayor for becoming our newest mayor. And it shows that the city of Dallas is serious about diversity and inclusion. And again, I want to say congratulations. Primarily, I'm here to talk about housing. And first of all, I want to talk from the standpoint of being formerly homeless. I was glad that you guys had the wisdom to maintain funding for homeless problems, solutions. I've worked with Homeless Solutions for several years in my capacities with MDHA, Operation Care, and et cetera. And Monica does a tremendous job at trying to address the problem, not just having a meeting or not just writing a paper, but she's actually seriously trying to end homelessness. So I want to thank you guys for maintaining that funding, and I hope that in the future you can make additional increases in that funding, because you can just walk around the corner and you see people sleeping on the streets. But the answer to homelessness and other issues concerning housing is to build affordable housing. Now, I have a friend who was on Frontline, featured as a affordable housing developer, and she tried to do housing in Plano, and she caught what you call virtual hell, because there were people who were not in favor of people who were deemed as not productive living in that environment. However, if you are homeless, you need affordable housing. And in my capacity with Opportunity Dallas, we made suggestions about how you guys could come up with a policy, which you did, to address housing. But we still need 10,000 units of affordable housing. So I have suggested previously when I was here that the city and the county do a bonding similar to what Austin has done, similar to what San Francisco has done. And what they've done, they've created this housing fund, which enables the builders, developers, to have funding available to build this affordable housing. Now, these funds will be paid for by the rent that affordable housing produces. Dallas Housing Authority, other agencies, will be able to use that funding and repay that bond, so it won't be a tax increase. And I would like an opportunity to come up before the council and present this proposal in more detail, aside from the 3 minutes that I have now, because you won't be able to ask me questions, I won't be able to answer your questions, and et cetera. So finally, I'd just like to say, how about them Cowboys? Because I was able to purchase a couple of tickets back in May to this game, and so how about them Cowboys?
All right. Thank you.
This concludes your open microphone speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Time's now 1:41, and this meeting of the Dallas City Council is now adjourned.